Welcome once again to our series, Interpreting the Bible Through the Ages. And as usual, our theologian in residence, as we can proudly call him, is Ron Eldred. And I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus of St. Patrick's Catholic Church here at 19th and Poplar, where the Shamrock intersects the streets. Ron, we've been talking about something in history about the interpretation of the scriptures, but we're doing it because we're trying to see how many of the false things that are taught today very popularly, such as New Age spirituality, the Jesus Seminar, the Da Vinci Code, even programs on public PBS, are really rooted in these new interpretations brought in by people, sometimes who were very honestly trying to defend the faith, but ended up in actually pulling the rug out from underneath a Bible revelation. So the last person we talked about was René Descartes, and maybe you could review just a moment what we had talked about René Descartes, who had such a profound influence on biblical interpretation in the 18th century.
Well, as we had started to talk about Descartes in our last session, he lived and flourished during the early part of the 17th century. In fact, he died in 1650. I'll come back to that a little bit later, perhaps. But he was one of the first philosophers that began to abandon Aristotelian or Thomistic realism. We talked a little bit about realism, and we're going to talk a lot more about it as we go along. And although he considered himself a realist is one who believes that there is an objective reality outside of one's mind. It really is there. It really exists.
That Jesus was a real historical person.
Sure, that he actually existed outside of the evangelist's minds when they wrote Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They just simply didn't make it up as figments of their imagination. Well, although he considered himself a realist, Descartes held that universal ideas or knowledge comes to us directly from God, not from our senses in contact with the material universe. St. Thomas had taught, much heard, that all knowledge comes first to us through the senses, as you know, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, what have you. Descartes' method of knowing truth is called innate ideas, which is the notion that spiritual ideas are not acquired from sense knowledge through our senses, and also then the application of reason to that knowledge, but are part of human nature. We're just simply born that way with certain innate ideas. But the Catholic Church, at least since St. Thomas, has taught that humans possess innate ideas. But this doesn't mean that knowledge of God is not learned. As Father Hardin tells us, it means, quote, knowledge of God is said to be innate insofar as we can easily know his existence by means and principles that are innate in us. End of quote. He's defining there what innate ideas are. In other words, we can use our God-given reason or ability to think and come to the conclusion that God exists, especially by perceiving the things that he has made, as St. Paul, of course, you know, told us very vividly. Descartes' system is a form of rationalism which holds that reason can give certitude without experience or verification of facts, which, of course, you know, again, come through our senses. In other words, he would say that, quote, our knowledge the world is acquired by the use of reason, and that sensory input is inherently unreliable, more a source of error than of knowledge. This is, I'm talking about Descartes. Descartes spends a lot of time in his writing telling us why the senses are not reliable. Just to give a couple of real quick examples. One would be, take a blind man. A blind man obviously is going to have a different perception of reality than people that can see, or a deaf person. A deaf person, again, is going to have a much different perception of reality than a person that can hear. You can see, of course, the complications if you're deaf and blind at the same time. Or on the other hand, once knowledge comes into our mind, and Descartes did believe we had a power of reason, of course, that could take over and help us then understand this data. You have preconceptions that the human being, because of this knowledge that we have, gives us preconceptions of things. So when data comes from the outside, through our senses into us, it gets filtered. It gets filtered through senses, which are not all that reliable a lot of times. And then once it gets into the mind, it has to filter through all of those preconceptions that we have, those prejudices that we have. So we tend to interpret the data however we're predisposed to interpret it. So that's not necessarily what really is outside of ourselves. But the Catholic Church has always taught and developed, of course, a very systematic method over the centuries in enabling us to be able to do that with a fairly high degree of certitude.
So he's really changing a method from Augustine to Aquinas, 13th century, and starting wanting to sweep everything off the table.
That's exactly what he was trying to do.
And say, now I have to start with methodical doubt.
That's what he called it.
And but he wasn't against God's existence or the like, but eventually people took him, and that's what happened.
Yeah, later philosophers came along and stripped away the religious content that he had to his philosophy.
Ron, since Descartes is so important to our understanding of modern biblical scholarship, tell us a little more about him.
Well, he was an ingenious mathematician. In fact, he invented analytical geometry. And he also developed, which of course is a new application of algebra to geometry. And he also invented Cartesian coordinates, or the graph system. Any person who takes a class in math or in physics or economics or anything of that sort, when you have, you know, your graph with four coordinates or four quadrants, and you plot linear equations on XX, YY, prime axes, and that kind of thing, that's really was all invented by Descartes.
So he was a very good mathematician.
Yes, he was. Well, he had a vision of replacing the traditional philosophy, that is, Thomistic or Scholastic or, the traditional philosophy that we call realism.
Of the Catholic Church.
Of the Catholic Church. Sometimes it's also called metaphysics, which had been developed by St. Augustine in the 4th century and refined by St. Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century, and which had lasted for over 1,000 years. Metaphysics has been defined as a branch of philosophy that investigates the principles of reality that exist beyond any particular science. It literally means beyond the physical.
Okay, that's good.
And
beyond what is attainable by our senses.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is concerned with explaining the ultimate nature of reality, of being or existence and the world. And I think that we can readily see why it fits so nicely, I think, with theology. Descartes' goal was to replace metaphysics with mathematics, which he considered a sure method of discovering truth. He maintained that mathematics is as certain as it is because it's based on a few very simple premises. So simple, in fact, that it's impossible to doubt them. For example, the shortest of distance between two points or a straight line is a short, how does that go now? The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. That's how it goes.
Okay, and that's self-evident.
That's self-evident.
Okay.
And he had a lot of other of these. Anybody takes geometry, you know, you have the axioms. And the axioms, of course, are just things that are self-evident. That's what, if you look up the word axiom in a dictionary, it'll tell you that which is self-evident. It doesn't have to be proven. It's just simply you innately know that this is true. And so there wasn't only just simply mathematical principles Descartes believed. He believed that there were some others, and we'll look at a few of them as we go along here, that you could start out and deduce all of the knowledge from those first principles in a very mathematical way. In other words, deducing conclusions from these certain premises Descartes believed would produce certain knowledge, just like you could have in mathematics. Using this method, mathematics had made great discoveries, and he believed that if he could apply this method to non-mathematical knowledge, he would be able, and all others would be able, to refute the skeptics of his day. He argued that nothing could be known with certainty, and more importantly, provide a method with which to acquire certain knowledge of the world that could be used to benefit mankind in some way or another, and, of course, to glorify God.
He was not out to destroy the idea of the existence of God or the church or the Ten Commandments or anything. He wanted a new way to deal with the skeptics who didn't want to take things from the Bible.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, using his method of a methodical doubt, as you referred to it a while ago, and mathematical physics, he hoped to reconstruct all knowledge and wisdom. As we discussed in our series in the Da Vinci Code, what he did, in effect, was to eliminate final causation from the causes of things, leaving only material and efficient causes, thus separating science from religion and faith from reason. Well, after having considered knowledge acquired by sense experience, by dreaming, or by demonic suggestion, Descartes concluded it was unreliable. In other words, knowledge coming to us through our senses, it could be, how do we know we're not dreaming or not, you know, when we think we're awake and all kinds of things? Or how do we know that knowledge we have hasn't been deceived by demons and things of that sort?
And he believed in demons. He wasn't talking about knowledge of God from creation or demonic influence or otherworld influence. He was just trying to get a new method that we don't have to use the Bible or Revelation. We want to go from reason.
Although he still believed in the Bible.
Right, he still believed in the Bible.
In fact, his interest would be to apply reason to understanding the Bible and Revelation.
Okay. So well, he's starting off with a good intention.
Yes. Well, in each of these cases that we mentioned, the demonic or the whatever, the only thing that one could be certain of is that he is having the experience he's having. That's the only thing that we can be certain of. We can't be certain of anything outside of us because of our limitations of our senses, or that we might be misled by demons, or we might be dreaming or whatever. So the only thing that we can actually be certain of is our own existence, our own being. And he concluded from this that one could know oneself as some kind of existing conscious being. In other words, one can know with certainty that he exists because of his experiences, which led to his very famous statement that just about everybody that's has heard of sometime or another in their life in some form or another, I think, therefore I am, or in Latin, cogito ergo sum.
Okay, so as we mentioned before, he wanted to take his hand and brush everything off the table, any kind of knowledge, religious or any other kind, and start with this one principle on the table that's certain. I know I think, I'm conscious that I think, therefore I exist. I want to start and build a whole new way of reasoning from that.
That's exactly right.
All right. What about Descartes' religious views? Wasn't he, as I think we mentioned, a fairly religious man? He wasn't against religion, God, the church, Ten Commandments.
Oh, yes, he was very religious. He was instrumental in the conversion of Queen Christina of Sweden that I mentioned, I think, last week, perhaps, or last meeting, or last session, who had to give up her throne as the Swedish monarch, had to be a Lutheran. And she moved to Rome and lived a very holy and virtuous life. Brian McGee writes in his a book called The Story of Philosophy that Descartes believed that there actually exist things outside of mathematics and logic, things about the factual world and about God. He believed that they were out there, you know,
sure,
beyond our senses. However, Descartes asked, can we know these things with the same degree of certainty? And to answer this question, he muses. This is Descartes now, he's quoting. I know myself to be a very imperfect being, ephemeral and perishable and finite. And yet I have in my mind the concept of an infinite being, eternal and immortal, perfect in every way. And it is impossible that anything should be able to create something greater than itself out of its own resources. Therefore, this perfect being must exist and must have implanted in me an awareness of itself like a craftsman's signature inscribed on an example of his handiwork, end of quote. And then Descartes concludes that, quote, the fact that I know that God exists and is perfect means that I can put my trust in him. He will not, unlike the malicious demon, deceive me. So, provided I play my full part, pay serious attention, and do all of the disciplined thinking required of me, I can be certain of the truth of whatever is then presented clearly and distinctly to me as being true. Not by my senses, of course, which I already know to deceive, but my mind, that part of me that apprehends God and also mathematics, neither of which the senses can do, the mind that I irreducibly am, end of quote. In other words, he's saying that the idea of God is innate in him, or in all of us. And our listeners might recall from our series on Catholic apologetics, Descartes' system of proving God's existence is similar to St. Anselm's, a proof, I think it's called the ontological proof, St. Thomas later rejected for various reasons.
St. Anselm's ontological argument is very, very profound. I know it's in philosophy when we took that, that was one of the things I kept trying to prove. No, St. Anselm's argument is okay, until finally I got it in my thick head that it really was based on sand, although it's a very appealing argument, and that's really what Descartes is applying to, that we have an idea of God as being perfect, and there, if he's perfect, being perfect, he has to exist, so God does exist. But it really doesn't hold up in logic itself. Well, going back with Descartes, the problem with Descartes' belief in God.
Well, the main problem is that it's entirely based on faith, what is known as fideism in theology. It entirely ignores doctrine and the church that bears witness to its truth. That's probably the main reason that St. Thomas Aquinas, you know, was skeptical of taking that approach exclusively as one, you know, to try to prove God's existence. It completely disregards reason in the formation of the faith and belief and is based totally on emotion and sentiment. In fact, his method completely separates faith from reason. And Rhonda Shervin and Eugene Kavanagh state in their monumental introduction to Christian philosophy entitled Love of Wisdom, Descartes, quote, does not ascend to God from the principles of existence understood in the beings observed by the senses. By a sort of angelism, being withdrawn from all contact with matter, he thinks to reach the intelligible order and God himself by virtue of his very method of doubting. Descartes is teaching a form of ontologism, the doctrine that man has an immediate knowledge of God. See, this is what St. Thomas is rejecting too. It is but a short step to the doctrine that the existence of all things in the cosmos, or that is the universe, is actually the divine existence, the further step into pantheism that Spinoza will take. Their later disciples will make explicit its virtual philosophical atheism, end of quote. In other words, what Shervin is saying there is that those who follow Descartes and pick up his method, they just simply strip out all of this religious aspect of it and just leave it a purely secular type of thing.
And that's why Thomas, one of his five proofs for the existence of God, was just the opposite. It comes from the outside. And he was using St. Paul, from the visible things of creation, we can come reasonably to the knowledge of our invisible Creator.
Yes, and we went through these five ways, as they're called, for proof of God's existence. They're not used very much anymore. To try to prove God's existence, because metaphysics has sort of gone out the window,
right,
especially since Vatican II for various reasons. But it's sort of making a comeback now, and perhaps we'll have occasion
to. And the Church has even defined that we are able to come to the knowledge of God by reason alone. Not all the beautiful things we know about God, Trinity and the like, but that we can come to a knowledge of God. The Church has always been a great defender of the ability of reason to arrive at truth.
And we can only go so far, though, because of our fallen human nature. Beyond that, of course, we need God's revelation. And, of course, that's what mostly this course is about, is how God's revelation has been interpreted. In fact, that's what we've been doing for the last 10 sessions or so, is looking at how this is God's revelation has been interpreted. And we'll continue to do that probably in the next 6 or 8 to 10 session. Well, going back to Shervin and Coven, they go on to say, quote, "There is no doubt that Descartes believes in God, but the metaphysics that knows God by the use of reason, cultivated and structured by an academic discipline, has suffered eclipse. The philosophical apostasy is at hand. For Descartes' disciples will simply deny the innate idea of God and assert that it is indeed nothing but a fiction, a mental structure induced by a philosophical pre-scientific stage of human progress." I'm quoting from them. "Descartes' God is already akin to the God of the deist. This God exists and perhaps plays an initial role in the cosmos, but does not figure in the ongoing movement of bodies in space. Descartes' personal interest lies in the direction of the mathematical analysis of these moving bodies, more in the study of the cosmos than in the ascent of the mind to God. The kinship between Christian philosophy and prayer disappears in his new philosophy. Hence, the spirit of prayer is absent from Descartes' works." Not from, I might add, Descartes' personal life, sure, but in his philosophy.
"And teaching others to think."
And teaching others to think this way. "They have become secularized, separated from religion. They set the stage for Spinoza," and we're going to talk about Spinoza, and we're going to spend a session on him. "Descartes," end of quote. "Descartes brings God in only to explain matters that his philosophy can't explain for the most part." Well, few of the philosophers who followed Descartes shared his view of the certainty of God's existence. However, and in fact, many of them left God out of the picture altogether. Nonetheless, he greatly influenced them with his emphasis on using deductive reasoning from unquestionable facts to derive logical consequences from these facts. In other words, the observer should start with reliable facts and then apply logic to these facts, not letting anything doubtful to intervene. And Descartes believed that this method was possible, made possible a mathematically based science that would give humans reliable knowledge about the world outside of the mind with absolute certainty. And this method was to become the foundation of the scientific method.
So it was okay for a scientific method.
Yes, it was.
To question everything.
Yes.
Okay, but unfortunately, what other truth and means of attaining a truth, such as revelation, off the table. All right, tell us more about Descartes' method, you know, how we go about this step-by-step thinking to obtain absolute certainty or absolute truth.
Well, his method is found in his Discourse on Method, at least that's the English translation. In it, he rejected the ancient realist philosophy of Aristotle and Aquinas for his rationalist philosophy instead. He writes that, quote, "He wishes to found a new practical philosophy. By knowing the force and actions of the fire, water, air, and stars, the heavens, and all other bodies that surround us, just as we understand the various skills of our craftsmen, we could make ourselves the masters and possessors of nature." End of quote. John Hittinger, who is a professor of philosophy at the U.S. Air Force Academy, and he also teaches at the Catholic International University, I think it's called, he says, quote, "We are now approaching the fulfilled dream of Descartes' modern project. For Descartes promised, as the fruit of his new philosophy, an infinity of devices that would enable us to enjoy without pain the fruits of the earth and all the goods one finds in it, but also principally the maintenance of hell." Hittinger tells us that in order for humankind to reach this goal, Descartes believed that the entire educational system would have to be reformed to more readily develop the experts needed to pursue scientific studies, and the experts would have to be revered as great benefactors who are free to pursue their study. And after he evaluated the educational system's curriculum of studies in terms of their certitude and utility, he eliminated, quote, poetry. This is Descartes. This is Hittinger telling what Descartes would do, yes. Okay. He would eliminate poetry and theology and philosophy and ethics and a few other disciplines. because they were unclear and didn't provide knowledge useful for life. Moreover, the fields of scientific studies would have to be developed from scratch.
Well, that's where we see the roots and the foundation of that science, which is recognized today almost as a religion, that there's no other means of attaining truth. That if science can't prove it, then we're just religion, the Bible, revelation, all those things don't really count. We've got to get it through scientific reason.
And as we pointed out in a couple of our other series, this is called scientism, this idea. Well, to quote Hittinger again on this, a little further on this matter, quote, "On the basis of mathematical science, Descartes proposed his famous new method of the conduct of inquiry. He would begin with the universal doubt of anything not clear and distinct. Again, traditional opinion would be swept aside in all areas in order to make room for the useful and certain knowledge of science." This sounds a lot like modern American pragmatism to John Dewey and William James. "The certitude of science would be assured by the use of a simple nature in forms such as principles of mechanics. In its streamlined form, the method for arriving at knowledge would follow the analytical method, breaking apart a problem into its simplest terms and then building up a greater level of complexity. Descartes' project and method have been tremendously successful." I might add, in the quote, I might add that later on, biblical scholars began to kind of started using this same methodology too, in this historical critical method that we talked about in a couple of other sessions, and we'll be getting into the history of pretty shortly.
And it's a wonderful methodology for science, but it really goes astray when it's applied to other things.
I think a lot of times it does, yes. Well, perhaps more than anyone, Descartes persuaded people in the Western world that certain knowledge of the world could be obtained by the scientific method. And in this regard, McGee has said, who we quoted a while ago, quote, "He, more than anyone else, sold science to educated Western man. It was largely under the influence that the pursuit of certainty came to dominate intellectual activity in the West, and that consideration of method became central to that pursuit. For he regarded himself not as giving us such knowledge with certainty, but as showing us how to get it," end of quote. And however, to obtain it, one needed to use the right method, and most of Descartes' ideas on the scientific method, as I said a little while ago, is found in his very famous discourse on method, and also in his Meditations.
We know, and we're going to talk about that next time, Ron, that Descartes had a tremendous development in modern biblical scholarship, but our time has run out for now, and to our listening audience, we say may God bless you always and in all ways.